Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films from all genres and bring you celebrity interviews every single week.
Very good, Lewis. Short but pointless.
Pizza Dude's got 30 seconds.
You want me to yank you out of that seat and shake it out of you?
I don't have it. Screws fall out all the time. The world's an imperfect place.
And now, here is your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD. So on the line with us today, we have a special guest. Our guest today is Michael Matteo Rossi. He is a director, writer, actor, and producer with 20 credits to his resume. He is on the show today to talk about his latest project, Chase, which you can watch now on Amazon and iTunes via rental or purchase. Michael, thanks for being here today, man, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you guys.
Yeah, looking forward to diving into your career and talking about the latest movie. JD, are you online, buddy? Can you hear me?
Oh, I'm here. I'm here and I'm ready to rock. Super excited for this episode. Just watched Chase myself. So I'm super intrigued to get a little bit of some background, some influences, and some words of positive advice from Michael. And I know, you know, I follow you on Twitter, man, and I see pretty much every day do like a motivational words of advice, don't you?
I try to, you know, I think we're all in agreement where this is the easiest business, especially on the indie level. So I try to kind of motivate friends, colleagues, followers to be like, just stick with it. You know, I know times are tough, but just keep at it. If you love it, you just got to power through.
That's awesome. And that was actually one of the questions I had is like, what advice would you give to somebody looking to break in? And you pretty much just answered it there.
Yeah, just keep plugging away. It absolutely. And just again, networking and just building up the right team, just working with people that you enjoy working with that actually get the job done, aren't just talk, and keep them around.
Absolutely. Now, I like to start from the beginning. At what age did you realize you actually wanted to get into the filmmaking business?
Well, it's interesting because I don't know how many people know it, but in my early teens / preteens, I actually did theater. I acted in plays and all of that. I was in a bunch. And I kind of shifted to more creative writing in high school, took a few classes, just really loved writing, telling stories. And that's when I kind of then, once I got to college, San Diego State, wanted to delve into directing and making these stories that I've written. So at 19, again, I made my first short and kind of never looked back, just pulled a bunch of people together and found a way to do it. And it's been awesome ever since.
That's so cool. Now, was that our Lost Translation?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you remember about that first experience in just making that short?
Well, it was probably the smoothest short experience that I've done. We shot the whole thing in 6 hours, including including lunch. So it was a good experience. You know, the first person that kind of brought it all together is this great actor / producer named Josh Bevier, and he's somebody I'm still friends with. Him, we worked on a couple films since, but yeah, I never looked back. Again, I was living in San Diego, but then drove back up to shoot it in LA over winter break sophomore year. And yeah, I mean, it was a good experience, and you learn from each film and all of that. But like I said, did my first short and never looked back.
So what would be your first project that you would have been like out of school, kind of away from, you know, the college that you're at, and now you're kind of on your own?
My first solo directed feature film that I did was Misogynist.
Okay.
That's one that I did. I did it, I believe I was 25 or 26. I had done a couple shorts before. I'd done a few short films after college, but Misogynist was my first one that I really tackled in terms of feature, bigger budget, all of that. And that was still, I mean, we shot that in 7 days, and it was a feature. a SAG feature, so that was pretty quick. And that was just an amazing experience. It got a good amount of buzz because of the content, I mean, the title, everything in it. And it did pretty well. It did well internationally. People liked it. Definitely edgy. It's got some kind of controversial topics, but
yeah,
it did pretty well. It picked up a couple awards and got into a few film festivals as well.
That's awesome. What was the biggest difference for you going from making these shorts, and I see like a TV series as well on your resume, to now going to, you know, an hour and 17 minute long feature?
I mean, it's the money, it's the budget, it's everything's on a different scale. You're doing a SAG feature film, and SAG is a whole other animal. And if you don't kind of understand SAG or aren't familiar with it, you get a really quick wake up call. You get a rude awakening, realizing that there's a lot of stuff that you need to abide by, you know, getting the actors out in 8 hours, you know, overtime penalties, deposits, everything. So, I mean, it was a great learning experience, but there's just so much that as a filmmaker, you don't know until you actually do it, until you actually have to go through that grind. You won't understand it. I mean, you can study, you can take classes, all that, but until you're there, in pre-production, in production, in post, it's definitely you know, an experience.
So from that standpoint, I mean, talk a little bit about the level of, were you overwhelmed by doing it? Was there like a sense of anxiety that like was instilled with you, or did you come into it with just like some bravado and confidence where you came, you saw, and you conquered?
Well, it's interesting because for about 6 months before I got Misogynist off the ground in finance, I went through 6 months of kind of development hell. I tried, you know, trying to attach a couple producers, things falling through, money spent, money wasted, all of that kind of went through it, got scammed by somebody. So, you know, these unfortunate things that kind of happen to some people, you know, happened to me. And I just kind of took a step back. I said, let me see if I can do, you know, a kind of contained feature, smaller cast, all that. And I got it done. You know, I got a group of people. I financed a good chunk of it myself, and we made it happen. But once it was like we were in pre-production and all that, I would say it shifted from being more nervous to more excited about it. So I was pretty excited. It was a journey. It was a pretty good experience overall. But you know, you have a mix of emotions from it. I mean, being on set for me is the best feeling in the world. At the same time, you are still dealing with a lot.
No, that's puts it in a very great way. So now, in your experience, and you have a lot of experiences, as Kyle mentioned, you act in your films, you produce, you write, you direct. What's your favorite part? What's the Michael Matteo Rossi calling card, if you could put yourself into one little basket?
Directing, I love to do the most, followed by writing, followed by producing. And that's kind of you to say that I act. I mean, I do cameos at most. I won't really call an actor, but that's nice of you. But I would say directing. I would say directing my work. I've directed other people's written work, but directing, just working with my actors on set and rehearsing, is definitely what I love to do the most.
Yeah, I think that's cool though, because that's one of the things I love about like M. Night, is you can always look for like that little cameo of him, and I'm like, even though he's obviously directing is his thing and writing, but then you look for that cameo, where is he? I know he's going to be in here somewhere.
So, well, you know, the kind of interesting thing is I technically had a cameo in Chase, but the way that it was shot and edited, I didn't make the cut, which kind of tore me up, because I mean, it's all good. I didn't really lose any sleep over it, but technically I was in front of the camera. It was just a quick thing where I was walking through it past the camera as just a cafe patron, and I didn't make the cut.
At least you only cut yourself then. You didn't have to call an actor and say, hey, you know, we appreciate all the time on set, but we cut you out.
Right, of course. So, you know, it's all good, you know, but just a little interesting something.
So, okay, so let's frame you as a director. What are some of your big influences or your big sort of what makes you who you are? Because everybody has that core of films that they can just sit down and say, without, you know, for me, without A Clockwork Orange, I'm not the writer that I am. You know, for Kyle, it's without some porn parody or something like that.
Wait, hold on. What?
Right. No, I mean, you know, you can't go wrong with the likes of Scorsese, Kubrick, Michael Mann, some Tarantino, Nolan, Fincher, even some kind of the classic foreign directors, you know, Fellini, you know, those type growing up really influenced me, Ingmar Bergman. But in terms of just the crime thrillers, again, the Casinos, The Goodfellas, Godfather, Carlito's Way, Scarface, these type of things really influenced me a lot. Even John Wick, you know, got to appreciate that. Again, grew up on 80s and 90s action films as well. So that's the type of stuff that really kind of does it for me. Yeah.
So I've got kind of a weird question.
Sure.
Bear with me here.
I will.
It's not that weird. No. If you were given any amount of money, doesn't matter, and we're told you get to remake any movie that you want, what movie would you remake? Or reboot or rehash, whatever the current...
I feel like so many films are remade and rebooted already that for the really good films... I wouldn't want to remake them, actually. I like where they stand. Like, if somebody said that they were, and again, God forbid this happens, trying to remake something like The Shining or Goodfellas or something like that, I wouldn't like that. I wouldn't. Some things do not deserve to be remade. And, I mean, again, it depends, but... Yeah, I actually wouldn't touch some of the classic films. I'm sorry if that's not the answer that I would say. It's just like things get remade.
I mean, it could be anything from Cobra to Sleepaway Camp. Like, you have your druthers.
Right.
It can be I'm just curious to what you think would be, because I would take a movie like Sleepaway Camp, which is a campy, schlocky 80s horror movie. And can you imagine reinvigorating it with the bright light and giving it the proper love and attention that it deserves?
Well, I'll say something. Maybe it's because it's on my mind because it ended recently and I don't want to spoil anything if you guys haven't seen it. But to be honest, and I know it's not a film, I would want to remake the entire last season of Game of Thrones, to be very honest with you. Okay?
You and everyone else.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone's seen it. I just, literally before this last season, it was my top. It beat out Breaking Bad in terms of my favorite TV show of all time. Now I got to really think about it again because I feel like they rushed the hell out of it. They made some poor decisions. Of course, the acting, the music, all of that is always going to be there, and it's not a knock on that. But you don't make a final season on six episodes, you know, and you don't have people waiting almost 2 years to give us what they gave us. So I'm just being very honest.
No, I agree with you 100%. Kyle is not a Game of Thrones fan, although he did watch the finale.
I watched the last 15 minutes, which was like a lot of walking and a lot of montage. And I was like, oh boy.
The last episode was just, oh my God, that just, let's not even get into it. They screwed up in so many ways. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
But but I guess if I wanted to remake one thing right now, it would be that.
Interesting.
Yeah. I kind of compared like that last 15 minutes to the ending of Breaking Bad, which I thought was could not have ended any better.
Right.
And I'm like, well, here's the blueprint of how you do it. And
absolutely.
Then they went the other direction. And again, I had no frame of reference. Yeah. Like I'm like Donnie and the Big Lebowski. Like, what the hell are you talking about?
Right.
But I'm out of my element. But yeah, I just feel like that was like the perfect ending to a show, and then you know this, and like the ending of Dexter, it was like, geez, come on, people, wrap it up a little bit better.
You know, again, with Breaking Bad, they tied it up perfectly. Like really, it couldn't have been. They covered all the bases. It was just beautifully done. And unfortunately, it's rare. I actually did a tweet about it where I said, you know, it's rare to have something end so perfectly. And look, even as a writer for me, sometimes it's tough ending mm-hmm. things. And I can only imagine for a TV show, the pressure and everything. But at the same time, I really feel like they dropped the ball a bit with it.
And I think a lot of people agree with you on that. Yeah. You know, we're primarily an 80s, 90s nostalgia podcast. So a lot of what we do is we'll pick a movie and we'll break it down literally scene by scene. If you were on our podcast for one of those episodes, like what's one of your favorite movies that you feel like would be fun to like break down scene by scene? Do you have one?
Well, in terms of 80s or 90s, like I said, I mean, I could watch Goodfellas 500 times. I mean, I already have, but that's a film that that I can just watch over and over again and never get tired of it. Absolutely love it, you know.
So that's a good segue. Let's talk a little bit about Chase. Yeah. What then did you take influentially from, say, Goodfellas that you were like, I want to do in the same vein, you know, from everything from, because you're a very hands-on director, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes.
You like everything from who you cast to where the camera's positioned to the coloring to the music to the sound, like you're it.
Correct. I try to be very hands-on with it, yes.
So what kind of influences did you take to bring into this film where you sort of said, this is my baby, but at the same time, I want to nod my cap to some of the greater films that influenced you to get to where you are?
Well, if you see with, for example, again, Goodfellas, the use of voiceover, and, you know, you've seen the film, we understand or we get inside Chase's head with his thought process and what he's going through, what he's experienced, the varying emotions. And with, you know, Goodfellas, whether it's Karen Hill or Henry Hill that are doing the narration, you're understanding what they're going through. And it really, it's done beautifully. And of course, you know, Scorsese's a genius in terms of just keeping the story flowing and understanding what they're going through and experience and what they're thinking. So that's just one example of how I kind of adapted it. You know, I've seen with even a bunch of reviews of Chase already. Of course, you know, there was a part of me that was influenced by Drive in terms of some of the visual aesthetics and all of that. You know, I think that that's a great film where it blends action with really kind of stylistic visual aesthetics. So that's something that that kind of influenced me as well. And again, I wanted to tell a good character-driven story with some great actors.
Yeah, and that absolutely came through. I picked up on all of the motifs from Drive for sure. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I sort of picked up on was through the monologue that Chase gives. He talks a lot about passion and how, and you've already talked about this when you talked about your motivational tweets, not giving up on your passion, accepting what your passion is, and sort of really diving headfirst into that, becoming the person that you're meant to be.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, to me, that was kind of like a message that you were giving to every other writer, director, producer, actor in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing because Chase, the character, he has a few redeeming qualities, but he's also, I mean, it's the Walter White syndrome. He has a lot of bad qualities about him. He is still an evil person in some ways. He still, you know, he cares about his family, or he does, but he still mutes things. I mean, even when he says, you know, it's your passion, just find something that you're good at and just don't care about it. Make it seamless. You know, he does at first, you know, have a very apathetic view to it, that I'm just good at this. I'm naturally good at it. I'm just going to continue it. And that is his passion. And, you know, that's what he says. He says, when you're good at something, you keep doing it. So, yeah, I mean, maybe in a very subtle way, I was kind of speaking to anybody's passion, whatever it may be. You know, if they like it, they're going to want to continue it, especially if they're good at it.
So, and on that same note, one of the motifs that I picked up on is, you know, misogynist. everything you just said sort of speaks to the male mindset, where you can compare Chase essentially to Don Draper and compartmentalizing the good and the bad, the same way that Walter White does, where you can take and you can buy into your, you know, the fame that you bring to a room and change it up as needed, which I think is phenomenal. And I think you did an excellent job of sort of portraying that on screen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, no, it's Chase is obviously a very conflicted character, very interesting character. And, you know, yeah, I definitely, in terms of comparing to some of those characters, yeah, that he has a cross that he has to bear. He is in conflict. He is pulled between family, work, family and career. So that's definitely there.
No, that's fantastic. So I'm curious too, because I, you know, noticed a lot of the actors that you brought into this film. You know, you had you did a great job of casting.
Can you
speak a little bit about that in terms of what you were looking for? Did you have actors in mind that you're like, I need Damian to be Chase, I need Aries to be Miles?
Was it sort of a more of a fishing experiment?
So I
had worked with Damian before on a short film that I did the year before, and he was awesome to work with. He was just great, true professional, funny guy, very cool, very down to earth. And when I was writing it as well, he was definitely somebody that I did have in mind, where I'm like, wow, this guy could play this kind of badass yet conflicted character. So then, of course, I sent him the script. He responded very well to it, and, you know, that type of thing happened. And with Aries, I had met with Aries a couple months before, kind of talking about this script with him. And I knew he's a good actor. And the funny thing is that a lot of these actors with comedic backgrounds or who have done stand-up are actually very good actors, and they can do very dramatic roles as well. So, you know, Aries read it, loved it, and I had Damian and Aries meet, and they just hit it off. Like, the chemistry was there. No, it was great, and I get a lot of compliments from both of them, especially with them being surprised with Aries. But as you notice, because you saw the film, he still adds a little bit of that comedy, that dark comedy. You know, his character is very evil, but at the same time, he can be funny in parts, you know?
So that's a great lead up. How much of it was improvised by him, or was he sticking to the script? Because some of it seemed like he was really injecting his own personality and comedy into the scenes.
Yes. So how I approach directing is, I sometimes give my actors range to ad lib sometimes, or feel it out. They want to try something. If it's in the framework of the film, I'm cool with that, you know. And of course, Aries, he's like Robin Williams. He can ad lib and fire off things very quickly. So the funny thing is, you know, the beginning scene where they're smoking cigars and all of that. If you remember that, the way beginning scene where Chase and them. That was pretty much all ad-libbed by Aries. He just went with it. I told him I told him the mood he's in. I told him kind of the context that this is just, hey, two guys shooting the shit, probably a little bit drunk, you know, just them just talking, two good friends that have been, you know, friends for 20 plus years. And he just fired off, and we did it a few takes, and I kind of cut around what I thought was the best. I mean, he got very vulgar in some time, so I had to dial it back, but we got some good stuff out of it. So, you know, little things, even he ad-libbed a couple little things in the cafe scene, in a couple of the other scenes, but some of which was so good that it made the final cut.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah, I could totally tell, and it's that passion that comes through from his acting, definitely, in this film. So that's such a great casting choice by you, for sure.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. And people haven't seen much of him in films recently. And that's the interesting thing, too, because, you know, there'll be some of these actors that are, you know, a little less than A-list, but they're in 500 films. Aries hasn't been in as many films. Like, people know him. People know him from Mad TV. People know him from, you know, The Pastor, Jerry Maguire, something like that, his stand-up. But I like that I was able to, you know, give him this opportunity as well.
That's great. You know, one of the cast members I wanted to talk about was Richard Reilly. Am I saying that right?
I think that's technically how you say it. I always say Richard Reel. I think technically you're right. Like, a German way of saying it is Richard Reilly, but I think I always call him Richard Reel, but you're probably correct.
Okay. So he's in one of our favorite movies that we've covered on this podcast, Office Space, as Mikowski. But I mean, he's a guy that has 394 credits. Like, what do you take from working with somebody like that you can take into like future projects? Like, what do you learn from him?
Well, first of all, and it said a lot, but Richard is one of the nicest guys I've ever had the pleasure of working with. He is an awesome dude. You know, when it's one of those things where you meet people that you either grew up watching or know about, and they're a jerk or something like that, or rude, you're like, oh, that's kind of disappointing. Richard, I could not say nicer things about him. He's a professional. He is awesome. Very talented. Just a good guy. Like, just a good guy. Seriously. And with his role, I knew that it was just, we shot out in one day. It was a smaller role, but I thought that he was perfect for it. And we were Facebook friends because I got introduced to him through another person. And I reached out to him and, you know, sent it to him, and then kind of dealt with his manager for the logistics of it and got him on board. And I was just so happy about it because, again, I love Office Space as well. That's seriously one of the best. And I actually still feel it's a little bit underrated. It should even be more regarded than how it is. And I know it is, but it's a great, and he's talented, but he's been in a ton of stuff. Had a small role in Casino. He was in The Fugitive. Yep. He was the dad in Deuce Bigelow. so, you know, he's awesome. Like, I couldn't say one bad thing about him.
Was he somebody that would come in and just, like, knock things out in one take, or does he kind of have to, like, feel it out a little bit?
So when he was on set, he was just so calm, cool, and collected. I really didn't need to give him much direction. We blocked out the scene. I explained what I was looking for, and yeah, he was just a true professional. He and Chase, because they were the ones that the scenes together. Yeah. Damien, they got along really well. It was natural, and we just, you know, I always like, you know, a few takes just for safety and options. Yeah. But he nailed it every single time. I actually did not need to give him that much direction.
That's interesting. Now, one thing I wanted to ask about, just like your directing, because we talked to an actor just a couple of days ago named Jeffrey Weissman, who's been in Hollywood for over 40 years, and he did a movie with Clint Eastwood, and he said one of the things that he remembers about Clint Eastwood is he never says action. He just goes, ready when you are. And then they would do the take, and if it was good, he would just go, cut, we're done. And they were like, no, I kind of messed up on this. He's like, nope, it's good. We'll cut from here. Like, like, is there any of that in you, or do you kind of have like a different style?
I definitely do say action. I make sure that my DP is set. I usually say set, you know, after sounds rolling and all that stuff. And then when he's set, when my DP's set, I will say action. I'll let it be, but I am very quick as a director as well. If they knock it out in 2-3 takes at most, we can move on or reset or do another angle. I am not, as much as I love the guy, I am not a Kubrick. I don't need 100 takes of one thing in the same shot.
Right.
I don't need that. So yeah, I think a little bit of Eastwood, and again, he's efficient. So.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? In 30 years, you might be doing the same thing. All right, boys, ready when you are.
You're right. You know, because he's been in the business for 50, 60 plus years. So you're right. You get into a groove of it. But I kind of am very comfortable with my approach to things, and it's worked well so far.
So on that note, let's transition from Chase to what do you have? What's next for you? What's your next movie that you're looking to helm? Do you have a project that you're sort of ready to bite your teeth into? I mean, obviously, I follow you on social media, so I know there is something that you've been teasing at lately. So go ahead and feel free to plug that.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, look, I'm always open, and again, we'll consider other scripts and all of that. I'm always open to that. But in terms of something, I wrote a script that I'm very proud of called Shadows. It's another kind of crime thriller. Yeah, just kind of in the works to get that happening. Hopefully, we'll film later in the year. That would be great. So that's kind of the next thing that I want to do.
It's fantastic. I know our audience is going to be very excited to watch Chase. They'll be very excited to check out Shadows when it comes. So if you want to go ahead and plug one more time where our audience can sort of follow you, where they can see Chase, where they can get updates about what you're doing next and sort of engage with your daily motivational wisdoms.
Yeah, I just use my full name, Michael Matteo Rossi. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, so you can find me on there. And I usually plug Chase a lot too, so I'll tag Chase in there and you can follow it that way. But again, the easiest thing is just finding me on that, use my full name. And yeah, I mean, hopefully your viewers enjoy the film if they see it and kind of like my little motivational tweets and posts.
Yeah, fantastic.
Definitely follow him so you guys can check that stuff out. Now, Michael, we'll get you out of here on this. At the end of every episode, we ask 5 short questions to our guest to hopefully learn a little something new about you, maybe outside of the filmmaking business.
Okay.
Okay. First question here is, what was the first car that you ever owned?
It was a 1983 Volvo.
Okay.
Silver Volvo, 1983. So, and I started driving in 2004. So yes, it was old then.
I figured it was old because you started laughing before you even said the name of the car.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, 1983 Volvo.
And how long did she last you?
Not too long, about a year. And
okay.
And then senior year of high school, I got another Volvo, but I think it was a 95
Volvo,
like 850 or something like that. That lasted me a decent amount, actually.
Moving on up.
Yeah.
I like it. Okay, cool. The second question is, what was your first job?
My first job, I was an usher at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, that's cool.
I was an usher. I would take the patrons up to their seats. I did that the summer in high school, and it lasted, a few summers after that into college. And it was cool. I mean, you basically got paid to see concerts, so I couldn't complain.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Number three, this one may be a tough question for you.
Okay.
Who is your favorite Batman?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Tie between Michael Keaton and Christian Bale.
Okay. Two very different approaches to the role, but equally very good.
If you had to twist my arm, maybe it's because I grew up on them and I remember them like as a kid.
Yeah.
Might have to give it to Michael Keaton.
Yep. Gosh, he's...
Yep.
I love his resurgence lately too, I'll just say that, into films. But fourth question, what's the last song you listened to?
Oh, God. Oh, actually, I know. Freebird by Leonard Skinner.
Okay.
I'm dead serious. Got it on my damn computer. Yep.
Rocking out the Freebird.
Yeah.
I love it. I once played that at my senior high school talent show.
Which is awesome. And I still feel it's probably the best guitar solo of all time.
It might be. Yeah, I was a bass player, though. I could not rock that solo to save my life.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I was hitting the 3-chord bass, just dum 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 dum, just easy.
Right, of course. So, that was the last song.
Okay. All right, last question for you. If you could go to one concert for a band, dead or alive, who would it be?
That's really tough. That is really, really tough. It might have to be a tie between a few. I mean, John Lennon just seeing seeing him perform. Even, and again, I'm more of a rock guy, but I appreciate this guy a lot because I think his lyrics and just his flow and all that. Tupac even. You know, I respect his music a lot, and I feel like he influenced a lot of people. And then even Sublime as well.
Okay.
Seeing Sublime in concert would be great, you know, because again, I'm a product of the 90s.
Right, and proper Sublime, not Sublime with Rome.
Yeah, no, like actually Sublime, Bradley Knoll, like that. I'm serious, like old school Sublime.
Love it.
Yeah.
Those were the best three choices we've heard yet. And it's probably because we're the same age, but yeah, nailed it.
Thank you so much, yeah.
Well, man, thank you so much for coming on and joining us on the podcast. Again, guys, you can follow Michael on Twitter. He's at Michael Mateo RO on Twitter. Just follow him on there. You can find out everything you need to know about Chase. It's on Amazon and iTunes right now for rental or purchase. And again, Michael, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you. This was fun, guys. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
We actually just finished up the interview with Michael Mateo Rossi. I had a lot of fun talking with him. He had a lot of good insight into filmmaking, especially for somebody that is on the up and coming director, writer, producer, / actor. He's got some really cool stories. I really enjoyed the interview. What did you think?
It's a fantastic interview. Listen, audience, it doesn't matter what aspect you're interested in film, whether you're just a viewer, whether you're a viewer, you're an actor, you're a writer, you're a producer, you're into casting, directing. It doesn't matter. Michael here, he's got great insight into every aspect of every single facet of making a film. And I know that's something that both Kyle and I are very near and dear to our heart. And so this was a fantastic interview.
All right. Thank you guys for listening to the podcast today. As always, you can download and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, YouTube. Everything's free. Also, make sure you find us on social media. We're at Back in Time Pod. I'm at KAutry29 and JD's at UnjustJustin. But for now, time to get back into the DeLorean, punch in today's day to return back to present day. We'll talk to you later in the week with episode 100. Back to the Future Part 2. Can't wait. See ya.
Can't hardly wait.
In our archives.